"'That,' Huia hastened to say hoarsely and with some heat, "'would be grumbling against the exalted parents in the upper story. "'For his duty is to reconcile us with the age. "'It was for that we dedicated him, "'and what he gets in return is enough to make everything good, "'so that he need not find fault or pull a long face. "'Nor do I think he does, least of all at us.' For he is by nature and spirit a man, and thus related to the lordly new. I cannot believe but that he consents to his parents' act of atonement, and wears his consecrated state with pride.
Surely, surely, she nodded. And yet, old man, thou art not sure thyself that the cut with which we severed the cord between him and the Mother Darkness was not a cut in the wrong direction after all. For did he, by being so consecrated, become a bull of the sun? No, he is only a courtier of the light.
Repeat not my own scruples after me, he reproved her hoarsely. Anyhow, they are not of the first importance. The first concern is that about the age and the order of the day, and the act of atonement. It is in the nature of atonements that they may turn out badly, and leave something not quite atoned for.
Surely, surely, she said again. And doubtless he hath, our Horus, rewards of the most flattering kind, and his compensations as son chamberlain and honorary official to the lordly are magnificent indeed, no question of that. But there is Aene, too, our little daughter-in-law, Mut Emenit the Beautiful, Potiphar's chief wife and head of the House of the Secluded Ones. Sometimes an old woman and mother like me has thoughts about her, too. She behaves with most loving respect toward us, yet I suspect that in the depth of her soul she harbors a faint secret grudge against us, because we made a courtier of our son, so that he is not really in her sight a captain of the guard, but only bears the title. Trust me, she is woman enough, our Aene, to sulk over it, and I am enough of her kind to read it in her face when she thinketh herself unwatched.
Nonsense, Huia rejoined. It would be ingratitude itself for her to cherish such a grudge as that in her exalted breast, for she has compensations, and even super-compensations, more than Petitpré himself, and I cannot bear to believe that she is gnawed by the worm of envy for earthly things when she has the blessings of the divine, bearing the title of Bride of Amun, and dweller in the house of his consort at Thebes. Is it nothing? Is it a slight thing to be Hathor, spouse of Re, and to dance before Amun with others of her order in the close-fitting garment, and to sing to the beating of the tambourine, the gold cap on her head with the horns and the disk of the sun between them? No, it is no slight thing, but a compensation of the highest and most glorious kind, which she has as spouse of the courtier our son. All this her kin well knew when they gave her to him as his chief and true wife when both were but children, and there could be no thought of marriage between them according to the flesh. And it was good so, for an honorary marriage it was, and has remained.
Yes, yes, responded Tuia, so it had to be. Yet when I think of it as a woman, I find it hard, brilliant indeed, and of great honor by day, but an affliction by night. Mut is she called, the wife of our son, Mut in the valley of the desert, a mother name from ancient times. But mother can she and may she not be, on account of our son's consecrated state. And I fear that she lays it up against us, taking it ill despite all the gentleness she shows.
She must not be a goose, scolded Huia, not a bird of the water-sodden earth. That she shall hear from me, our daughter-in-law, if she sulks. I do not like to hear thee take her side against our son, simply because thou art a mother and a wife. Thou dost offence to Horus, our son, and even more to the woman nature for which thou thinkest to speak, for thou degradest it in the world, as though one could never see it in any other image than that of the ever-pregnant hippopotamus. Truly thou art by nature a mole, and it was I, by my man's nature, gave thee the thought of the new age and the part payment. And yet thou couldst never have received it, nor understood it, nor come to terms with the act of atonement, if there were no link between the woman's nature and the purer and more lordly one, so that it had no share in it at all. For must it be that the black pregnant earth is ever the woman's image and portion? By no means. The woman may in all dignity appear likewise as the chaste priestess of the moon. I will let her know, thy Enni, that she must not be a goose. As our son's chief and true wife, she is counted among the first women of the land. To his greatness she oweth it that she is friend to Queen Ti, the wife of the god, and is herself a god-wife of Amun's southern house of women, and belongeth to the order of Hathor, whose head and first woman of the harem is the wife of Beknekans, the great prophet. So great indeed are her spiritual compensations that she is, in short, herself a goddess, with horns and sun-disc and a white moon-nun in her spiritual state. Is it not quite fitting that her earthly marriage is honorary, and her spouse on earth a dedicated atonement and a courtier of the light? All that seemeth to me most excellent, and let me tell thee, it is what I would have said to her, if she hath not understanding for the fitness of it.
But Tuia answered, shaking her head, I cannot tell her, for she gives no occasion to her mother-in-law for such a rebuke, and would be amazed if I were to do thy errand and tell her she is a goose. She is proud, our Enni, as proud as Petipre, her husband and our son. Neither of them knows aught but the pride of their day, neither moon nun nor sun chamberlain. Do they not live in happiness and self-respect in the sight of day, in harmony with the best society, and pleasing in the sight of man? What need they know but this, their pride? For if they knew more, they would not admit it or confess it to their own souls, but only continue to pay honor to their pride. How shall I take the word goose from thy lips and give it to our daughter-in-law? For she is no goose. She is proudly conscious of being set apart for the god, and her whole being is scented with the bitter fragrance of the myrtle. When I speak of ill-feeling and of affliction, I have not the day in mind, nor the honors of the day, but the silent night and the mother darkness, where it is no use to scold and call names. Thou hast sometimes been afraid of the vengeance of the light because of our marriage in the darkness. I sometimes, as a woman, fear the vengeance of the mother darkness.
Here Huia began to snigger. The sound startled Joseph a little, so that he stirred the slightest bit, and for a moment lost his impersonality as dumb waiter. His gaze forsook the background for a flash, and sought the old pair to see if they had noticed. But they had not. Absorbed as they were in their talk, they gave him as little heed as they did the alabaster lamp made by the sculptor Merem Opet that stood in the other corner. He turned away his gaze, and once more looked past Huia's ear into the background. But his breath went fast, after all that he had listened to hear old Huia still laughing his old man laugh. It sounded uncanny.
"He-he!"
went old Huia. "No fear. The darkness is dumb, and knoweth naught of anger and revenge. Son and daughter-in-law are proud to know naught of mumps and dumps, nor yet ill-feeling against the parents who treated them thus, and made a barrow of the little boar when it could hardly walk and had no ideas at all. No fear. Mumps and dumps are well shut down in the dark, and even if they stuck their noses out into the light, they would be bound by the rules of decorum to be gentle and polite to their exalted parents, however much we may have played them a trick in the past, to our own advantage. Twice bound, doubly sure, doubly sealed. Nothing to be done against the parents, so snug in the upper story." Tuia at first seemed uneasy as she listened, but she was gradually convinced, and joined in his laughter till her blind eyes went quite shut. There sat the old pair in their stately chairs, and chuckled together, with their hands on their stomachs, their shoulders stooped, and their heads drawn down between.
"Yes, thou art right," Tuia chimed in. "Thy old mole can understand the joke. We played a trick on our children, but we are doubly safe against their wrath. That was cautious and crafty, and glad am I that my old frog is merry and hath forgot his fear of the judgment in the halls of the dead. But feelest thou now no desire to be refreshed, no exhaustion, so that I should summon our dumb waiter to fetch up his dainties?"
"Not at all," replied Huia. "I feel not the slightest weariness. Rather, our hour of talk has given me new life. Shall we save our hunger till the hour of the evening meal, when the exalted family gathers in the dining-room, and we elegantly hold the lotus blossom to each other's noses? Let us clap, that our servants may come and support us as we walk in the orchard. For my old limbs feel desire to stir."
And he clapped. The little maids came running, their mouths open foolishly in their zeal. Each offered a spindling arm to a parent, helped them down the terrace, and away. Joseph fetched a deep breath and set down his burden on the floor. His arms were nearly as lame as when the Ishmaelites had drawn him out of the well.
"Certainly these are fools before the Lord," thought he. "These exalted little old parents! What a glimpse have I had into the painful secrets of this house of blessing, may God pity it! Thus we see that to live in the highest heaven of good taste doth not save one from the most arrant blunders. How I should like to tell my father of this exalted idiocy!" Poor Potiphar!
And he lay down on the mat to rest his tired limbs before carrying the refreshments back to Kamat.